We're speaking with Bruce Kiessling, music director and conductor of the Sequoia Symphony, and their upcoming performances on Friday, October 18th and Saturday, October 19th feature John Williams' stunning score from Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. And rather than this being a concert of a symphony performing film music, the orchestra will be providing the soundtrack with a live showing of the film in time. A very exciting concept, Bruce. This is happening with a number of symphonies around the U.S. I know this summer L.A. Phil did a series of four kind of performances like this. How did you come to pick Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Yeah, David, thanks so much for having me. It's great to have the chance to talk about some of our upcoming performances. And certainly Raiders of the Lost Ark in particular, and just the idea of doing a live film, you know, live to picture, it is something that you see more and more orchestras doing around the country, not only in Los Angeles, but the Philadelphia Orchestra, I think, did four this summer at their summer home, San Francisco Symphony. So it's really something that you're seeing more and more orchestras doing, mainly because they are proving to be very, very popular with audiences. As you just described, I have, with the Sequoia Symphony Orchestra, we've done many performances over the years that have been kind of highlight programs where we choose a theme, or John Williams specifically as a composer, and do sort of excerpts from various film scores that people know, Star Wars, Superman, all that kind of thing, or maybe a superhero show, which we've done, Cloak and Dagger we did for spy movies. But this idea of actually doing a film live to picture is kind of that next step that you might do and take in terms of presenting film music really as it was intended to be viewed. You know, a lot of composers in LA think it's kind of weird to play film music apart from the film that it's written for, because it's so closely linked to it. And certainly a few composers, maybe Henry Mancini, John Williams, and a few others, their music excerpts well. You know, it tends to sound pretty complete and full when you play it without the film. But most film music really comes off best, I think, when it's part of the story that it's meant to accompany. Now, the best example that I can think of is when we were kids, you know, you might have had those storybooks that say, you know, turn the page when you hear the bells. Well, what if you just heard the bells but no story? Those bells, that would not be the most compelling musical score. But when you have that, the score, the story to take you through, and the music to kind of inform what we're hearing and seeing on the screen, then I think you have really the complete version that these composers were hoping for. And as far as the specific choice of Raiders of the Lost Ark, I saw this done live with the Philadelphia Orchestra in 2017. And what I was struck by is how much fun the music is, how much music there is. So there's a lot for our orchestra to sink their teeth into. And then lastly, that it was family friendly. We really wanted a program that would include something for all ages. And we thought that was a nice sweet spot. Several years ago, the orchestra did live to picture the films Psycho and Casablanca, which were a ton of fun, much less technically involved, but they really didn't appeal to all ages. And those concerts both sold out in no time. But it, especially doing two performances, we wanted something really family friendly that everybody could enjoy of all ages.
How do you prepare an orchestra to do a live performance of a score and have everything sync up with the film? That seems like, it's one task to have a studio orchestra do that in recording. How do you make that happen live so you hit your marks, as it were?
Right. That, I think you've hit the nail on the head in terms of what's the real challenge there. Because, you know, if you imagine a film that where you have a hammer hitting a nail on the head, you may have something in the music that needs to happen not just after that. So you can't do it when it, you can't cue the orchestra when it happens. You kind of have to cue the orchestra before that so that that sound effect happens at exactly the right moment. Car wrecks, big crashes, lots of cartoon effects. Those things are very difficult to time, and it's very important for the music to be effectively synced up with the film. And so that's kind of the biggest challenge of it. Yeah, there are musical challenges. There's a lot of notes in this particular score. But as far as the preparation goes, this film, we will be done to click track. So 40 members of the orchestra will all have at least one headphone in that actually has a metronome that clicks along, so you can stay with the film. And visually, myself as the conductor, I have my own screen that I can watch the film on. And on that screen, there are something called streamers and punches as well. So the streamers kind of give me, as the conductor, a warning, like, uh-oh, something's about to happen. And across the screen, there will be a bar. It's actually a yellow bar that goes across, which is kind of a warning light, like, get ready. And then there will be a green bar that says go. So when that bar reaches the far side of the screen, that is when something has to happen at exactly the moment that that green bar gets to the far side of the screen. So that way I'm able to anticipate it happening and move my arms and bring the orchestra in. Because sometimes you click track, anticipating that, it can be difficult. So that's why I have the streamers to do that. And that works pretty well. In fact, the films that I just mentioned to you that we have done, Psycho and Casablanca, there's no click track with that, and no streamers. It's actually done what we call wild, which means you just kind of conduct the music along. Particularly in Psycho, there's only one moment that's supposed to actually sync up directly with the film, where a car stops and there's something that's supposed to happen when the car comes to a stop. But other than that, it can all, if you're pretty much within a second or so, it's fine. So there's just a clock that ticks down and says, oh, when you're around 17 seconds, you should be here. When you're here, maybe 35 seconds. But in this score of a modern film, especially kind of an action adventure film like Raiders, wow, everything has to be at exactly the right time.
And especially in the way that Spielberg as director and Williams as composer have collaborated. Spielberg, you know, I know he said you should be able, number one, he said about film, you should be able to watch a movie with the sound off and tell what's going on. And then he views music as equally as important, in some places even more important than dialogue, in advancing the story. And those two have had such a rich collaboration over the years that without the music, you don't have Steven Spielberg movies, including Raiders. So how do you practice yourself for this? Because this seems like an extra kind of prep in advance for prepping the orchestra.
Definitely. There are different things that go into the preparation here, because it's not just learning the music, but learning the exact tempos that the soundtrack uses so that I can reproduce those. And also just watching the film a lot. 7 weeks ago, I started watching the film once a day, every day, for about 2 weeks. And at first, I wasn't really even paying attention to the music for the first three or four times. I'd seen the film many, many times myself. But to really watch it with an ear and an eye toward what was happening, when the music comes in, et cetera. And then I began watching that version of the film that I will be watching that has the streamers going across. So I can just get used to how those look, how the timing of that happens. And it's much easier because so many members of the orchestra will have a click track, which will help keep things from getting slower or faster, which sometimes happens in live performances. In some ways, you're limited in terms of the kind of musical expressiveness, because these things have to happen in a set time. You know, one of the discussions we always talk about in music is what's the difference between lyrics and poetry. And one of the things that we often arrive at is that, you know, poetry does not exist in time in the way a lyric does. A lyric comes at you at a certain speed. And in film music, all of these themes, all of this musical material in this film, it has to come at you at exactly the correct speed. So my job here is to reproduce that while still giving the orchestra some room to be expressive, but still reproduce everything happening at the right amount, the right speed, the right tempo. And again, many times there are moments that really need to sync up with the film. If there's like a jump cut or some other editing thing where they jump over to a different scene. And famously in this film, you know, there's that little map where we see the little red line as he travels around the world, as we hear that little dun 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 dun. And as much as you think that famous theme, you're like, oh yeah, that comes in when he does something heroic. It comes in every time he does something heroic. And I would say I thought I knew most of the famous moments when that theme comes in, but it comes in at least twice as much as I thought. And you find, oh my gosh, like right then it comes in just what it's supposed to. And John Williams in particular is so gifted at finding ways to kind of just naturally let it appear in the music. It never feels sort of forced or cut in or kind of just pasted on top. It's really part of a larger musical phrase.
Yeah, it's just he seamlessly weaves it throughout. It's absolutely right. And I read also that Williams originally wrote two different kind of ideas for Jones's theme, And Spielberg liked both of them so much that he insisted they both be used together in what became the Raiders March.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he does have a gift for melody. And I think people often ask me what makes John Williams' music so memorable. And I think it is that he has something special. Lots of composers are good orchestrators. Lots of composers are good musical narrators. You know, they accompany music and films very well. But I think John Williams has a special gift for melody that is appropriate for a film, you know, whether that's Angela's Ashes or Schindler's List or E.T. and Raiders of the Lost Ark or Star Wars. His melodies can be in all different styles and genres, but there is something really memorable about them. And in many interviews, he has spoken about how he tries many, many different combinations of notes. So what you're hearing in Raiders of the Lost Ark, that famous theme, bum, ba-dum, bum, that's the result of, you know, maybe dozens and dozens of rejected options that result in him really distilling down, well, that one's really memorable, or that part's really memorable. What if I combine that then with this part? As you said, it's got a couple of different dun da dun dun da dun dun da da da. Just so many wonderful themes. And the other most notable in this film certainly is the arc theme, and that occurs usually in the woodwinds. But every time a character mentions the arc of the covenant that they're looking for, every time it's mentioned, that thing comes back in the music. And it so subtly, as you said, just weaves it in with incredible skill.
As you mentioned, like, you didn't realize how many times these themes actually appear in the music until you're intently focused on it, but they work so effectively on just a subconscious level of cementing things together in the film. Now,
exactly.
There's so many composers who never got a chance to write for film, i.e. anyone who died before 1900, but composers have for hundreds of years have written for dance, written for the theater. Thinking of composers you like, who would you love to have heard compose from film?
Well, I think, as you suggest, you know, people writing for the theater, which was really the music of the films of their day, whether that's opera or dance and ballet, you see so many people who would have been wonderful film scorers. You know, music of Tchaikovsky, I think, would have just been a miraculous film composer because his gift, another one whose gift for melody was prodigious. And just like a guy who's, you know, I'm working on the Fifth Symphony with another orchestra right now. And every rehearsal, I'm just like, oh my gosh, it's just another great melody. And then, oh my gosh, another great melody. He just keeps coming up with them over and over again, these inventive, memorable, gorgeous melodies. So I think Tchaikovsky would have done a wonderful job with that. And his operas are particularly colorful in their orchestration and beauty. Certainly Beethoven, I think, also would have made a wonderful film composer because his interest in Fidelio, his opera that he struggled with, I think the monumental weight of how important those kind of composers took the work, which I think would be the greatest challenge of some of those masters, because the speed at which film music needs to be composed is sometimes startling. You know, there are wonderful stories about some of these composers finishing film scores in 2 weeks. John Williams writing 2.5 hours of music for Empire Strikes Back in a matter of a month or so. And I'm not sure that Brahms or Tchaikovsky or Beethoven could have written that quickly, music that needed to sync up to time. And it's a different skill set, of course, and there's no question they could have developed that. But I think that would have been a unique challenge. And then the other composer, I think, too, I think Schubert probably would have written some wonderful film music because it would have helped him edit. He would have been forced to keep things of a length that the film was. But also he had a particular gift for melody. He was a songwriter, you know, wrote over 1,000 right. songs. But also just he felt things so deeply, and sort of the tortured artist. I think the drama and the melodrama in so much film, I think, really would have spoken to Schubert.
We're speaking with Bruce Kiessling, music director and conductor of the Sequoia Symphony, whose next concert is a live performance of Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark. What exciting things do you have coming up in the season for the symphony?
Right. Well, of course, Raiders is kind of our opening season concert, so that's kind of a big shiny thing that we're all talking about right now. But in November, we're turning to our traditional classical program on November 16th, where we'll be presenting a program we're calling Bold Beginnings. In this particular year, we're celebrating 60 years of the Sequoia Symphony Orchestra. And we're really talking about, rather than saying, hey, let's celebrate 60 years of the past, we're trying to look at this and say, let's look ahead at the next 60 years of the orchestra. So all of the pieces really on the program for all of the concerts this year are important first works. So that doesn't necessarily mean it's the first thing that a composer wrote, but it may be the first in a certain genre, like maybe their first concerto or their first symphony, their first opera, or in many cases, their first successful work, or the work that people feel maybe is the one where they hit their identity, where they really became the composer that they would become, not some of their student works, et cetera. And that's perfectly illustrated in our first program, which is called Bold Beginnings, where we're really looking at these two masterworks of two of the great B's of classical music, Beethoven and Brahms. Beethoven's first piano concerto, which was an enormous success for him when he was a young composer. You know, he studied with Haydn, and it was not a great match. The two of them didn't really get along so well, so they didn't study together for a terribly long time. But later on in life, Beethoven wrote that he really felt that he learned a great deal from Haydn. I think the exact quote was that Haydn had more talent in his little finger than I have in my entire body. So eventually he really came to terms with that early collaboration. But that was right around the time that the first piano concerto was written. And there is just so much joy in it. That's why I love it. There's a beautiful second movement, a lovely kind of slow march in the first movement. But the finale, this rondo that's just charming and exciting, starts with a big piano solo. And then the orchestra almost seems like they're going to be sitting around for the whole time. And then they come in and launch into this, it's kind of a folk music inspired finale, which I just love. And then very important for us, you know, I've been with the Sequoia Symphony now for years, and we've done, and believe me, people have let me know this, but we've done surprisingly little music of Brahms. And so looking ahead, we're trying to rectify that. These last 10 years, we focused a lot on music of Tchaikovsky and Beethoven, where we've done almost all the Beethoven symphonies, almost all the Tchaikovsky symphonies. We'll be wrapping up those cycles in the next year, but we're also beginning to explore the music of Brahms, which we're quite excited about. Brahms really struggled to write a symphony. You know, he very, very strongly felt the shadow of Beethoven, who he adored. And so poor Brahms, he just felt like, well, what have I got to say after Beethoven did all these amazing symphonies? There's no way my symphonies are going to be any good. And so he abandoned several early symphonic attempts and turned them into his piano concerto, his violin concerto, and other works. But finally, in his 40s, about at the age of 44, Brahms finally produced this first symphony, and it is a really fantastic work. And many people have said that it's Beethoven's 10th symphony because it continues that sort of romanticism, but in a particularly Brahmsian way that has weight and power and drama and just a really fiery finish as well, which is magnificent. And I think it's kind of appropriate here. Brahms was 44 when he wrote it. I'm just a little bit older than that when I'm first conducting it. It seems like a good match for myself and for the composer, both to be finding this music together at similar ages in our careers. And I know many players of the orchestra, too, and our audience here in Visalia are excited to finally hear some really, really beefy Brahms. We've done some of the shorter works, for sure, but not any of the symphonies yet. So that's too long in coming, and we're glad to rectify that starting with this concert.
Well, that sounds like a terrific lineup for your Bold Beginnings concert in November on the 16th. And the Sequoia Symphony will be performing in Visalia at the Fox Theater Friday, October 18th and Saturday, October 19th. Full orchestra performing live with Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark, the complete film. Music director and conductor Bruce Kiesling, thank you so much.
Thank you, David. Glad to be here.